Hello and welcome to Films Like the First Time.
Why did you have to do that?
What are we even doing?
I don't know. I was trying something.
I just realized we didn't sound check at all.
Yeah, no, we're fine. It's the same settings as before on this.
Sweet.
Also, I got to do all the work anyway afterwards to edit it, so.
All right, I'll just talk like this.
So, yeah, I'm Nick.
I'm Amanda.
I'm Dave.
And we may or may not be joined by millions of special guests, the Cicadas. I don't know how it's going to sound when I go to edit. But
I mean, I can close the window if
nope,
you need me to.
Too late. We've started, and okay. I also wanted to get stuff in here. So you might hear the cicadas in the background, and if you do, then so be it. If not,
it's just great. Romance music.
Yeah, love is in the air.
It's very much in the air in central Illinois right now.
All of the air. they do
and
it.
Stuck in a lot of walls and cars
and trees and grass and everything. Yeah. Yes. But we're not talking about cicadas, we're talking about Parasite.
Mm-hmm. Which cicadas are not.
No, they are not. Which is why I didn't call them a parasite, because they aren't. But anyway, we're talking about the Oscar award winning best picture winning Parasite, which
did
I had
it
never
really?
Seen. Yeah, it won best picture.
Yeah, it did.
Oh, I'll be damned. Wow, this is as
is this our first best picture winner?
I
think so.
This
We've
is as close
some...
to the rules as I've ever played for this podcast.
Yeah,
we had
no,
some
this
Oscar because Pan's Labyrinth won some Oscars,
yeah,
but not
didn't
best,
win best
picture.
Yeah, picture. I was the
Up
only...
did Up win?
It won best animated feature.
Okay.
And I don't think It's a Wonderful Life won best picture either.
I have
it
no
shouldn't.
Idea.
But I have no idea what it was going up against. But
right.
I mean, you didn't watch it, so
right.
We do have a lot of best picture winners on our list, partly because I added a bunch of them because they won best picture. But this is not one of them that I had seen or added to the list, so I watched it for the first time.
Yeah, this was actually on the list already, like from where you looked online, like 100 best films or whatever. I think this was already on the list.
Yeah, it was already on the list, yeah. It was also on my own, like, just personal to watch list.
Well, now you've watched it.
Yes. Strangely, I haven't watched a lot of Korean film. I've seen films from other Asian cultures, but Korea was not one that I had seen a lot from.
Oddly, I've not seen a lot of other culture Asian film, but I've seen a lot of Korean. And I think it's because I like horror and they're masters of horror. So I've seen a lot of Korean horror films, which this was actually
I would call
sort
it a horror film.
Advertised
it,
as a horror.
It, yeah, it seemed like it was, but it's oh so much more than that.
It's not what I think of when I think of a straight up horror. Some horrific things happen,
well,
for sure, but compared to, you know, like Ringu,
it's a thriller.
Like, it's very different.
Well, I for me, it's kind of horror that I'm more attracted to in general. It's more about human nature and less about the grotesque.
I think of it as more as a, I guess, psychological thriller, but not even in the way that you would normally think of that.
Well, yeah, but like it does kind of go
it's
along
not
with like Hitchcock.
Whereas like a psychological thriller, a lot of the times it's based on like the psychology of the killer or something. This is more a class psychology.
Yes. Oh,
and,
very much
and,
so.
And a culture psychology. Like, so I mean, and how they interact. So,
well, and I do think that there are interesting, it's interesting because I think class psychology and yes, they're both Korean made and I understand that. And that's not fully why I'm making the comparison, but the parallels between this and Squid Game are definitely there.
I've actually never watched Squid Game.
It's really good. But it's a lot about class psychology, and also the sense of humor of this film is very similar to some of the sense of humor in Squid Game.
Yeah, this film, like, the first half is, I'd classify it as a comedy. Like, it's...
Sure.
I think I told you guys, I was like, oh, I forgot how, like, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels the first half of this movie is.
Well, and it... Yeah. We'll get into, like, the details, but yeah, there's definitely that con man element. There's also, and yes, I know the Bundys weren't con artists, but the family had a very Bundys vibe when we first get introduced to them.
Yeah, but my argument was that the Bundys were mostly lazy and stupid.
Yes.
Whereas, like, these guys are clever and
are
industrious.
They're clever and industrious, but also... It's interesting.
Like they
go
saw an
through.
Opportunity,
yes.
and they maximized.
But they've also failed at all of those things so many times. Like, they talked about, like, all the things the dad has done.
Well, we see it. Yeah. The frickin' pizza boxes.
The fucking pizza boxes are so stupid.
But this is like, you know, they're gig workers.
Right. But we don't even see that at first. So let's get into the movie itself. So we start off, we're seeing their home. We see socks hanging from the ceiling.
Well, they're on a drying rack.
Yeah, but it was like a weird shot. Yeah,
it's not like a randomly where like a sock ended up on a fan or something.
Right. And then we see the bathroom, which has a toilet on a
stage? You gotta walk up steps to get to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I still think that's a plumbing thing.
I think it's
probably.
I think it's
yeah, we talked about that.
They wanted to actually
recording. Call
it a throne.
So there you go.
Yeah. But yeah, you can't stand to pee there because the ceiling doesn't go up. Just the lower level part of it. The floor goes up.
I can't stand to pee.
And we get some interesting shots of them. It seems like the mother was an athlete at one point.
Yeah.
And
an ass kicker, no less.
And then, you know, we get them. The shot that got me is they're folding the pizza boxes, and the fumigators come by, and he's just like, "Leave the windows open; it'll kill the bugs."
They mention the bugs a couple of times, like turning the lights on and the cockroaches running.
Right, but the fact that they sat there and allowed themselves to breathe poison so they could have free extermination of the bugs is so wild.
I guess that's just emblematic of how long they've lived this way, where
it's just life now. Yeah.
Where and you've already weighed these different options. And it's like, all right, well, what would you rather have?
So the reason that I thought of the Bundys is the things like that. They're living in this kind of dumpy thing, but then they do things like stealing the Wi-Fi, which made me think of the Bundys and if you remember the joke of the Fox viewing positions, where they would have to hold the antenna specifically. Like that.
That was more of a joke on Fox than
it was, but it was also like it was the way they were living in their space that made me think.
They were weirdly kind of resigned to their fate,
right?
But also, yeah, actually, that would be the perfect way to put it, where it's like, hey, there might be minor improvements here or there, but this is our lot.
Right. And we see right away that Kevin's a pretty good talker. He convinces the pizza delivery girl not only to give them the money that they need, despite the fact that they fucked up the boxes, but also give him a job working for her.
As downtrodden as this family is, every one of them they have intelligence. They have skills.
Yes.
They just haven't figured out the right way to apply everything for something consistent, it seems.
Well, it's because they're always looking for an angle.
But right? Also, they're always looking for an angle because I feel like when you grow up poor, truly poor,
right,
you figure these things out. These are the ways that you can get things you need without spending money.
I agree with you on that.
It's all part of the hustle.
Well, and it goes back to...
It's not even always a hustle.
No, but I mean hustle... I don't even mean hustle.
Hustling out
I mean,
of
there's
the
that double
in.
Meaning to yeah, it. Yeah. But, I mean, again, they're not... They're trying to work smarter, not harder, but they work really hard for diminishing returns. There's like a broken logic to that.
Well, and this also goes back into that theme of class, which we see throughout this film and is a pivotal part of the climax of this film as well. And one of the questions that I'm going to ask later is...
Why don't you just ask it later?
Well, okay, fine, I will. I'll hold on to it then.
Who announces they're going to ask a question?
Someone that was going to try to build the conversation towards that
question.
All
right, fine. But, let's see how it goes.
Well, who is guilty here in this film, right? Who is at fault? Who is guilty? And just thinking about that, that was one of the things that I thought about after watching it and reflected on. And I think this is the start of those conversations later on.
Gotcha.
And then we meet Kevin, and I keep calling him Kevin because that's what he goes by once they're in the house.
Honestly,
that's his American name.
Honestly,
or his
I've seen
name?
This movie like three times now. I don't have any idea who anyone's name is.
Kevin.
Kevin and Jessica are the brother and sister.
No, the American names. I know.
But
well, she's
the two rich children, their names, kept confusing me, going back and forth. So I
was like, D song, and this is just me being white. I'm sorry, yeah. guys. I which can't is, keep which track is
part of
the
why
names.
I'm not even attempting.
Yeah, fair enough. Right. So I think just going by Kevin and Jessica is easier, and we'll just go with that.
I was thinking as I'm watching this, I'm like really trying to absorb these names, which I'm terrible at anyway. And I'm like, I'm just going to have to be like the mom, the dad, the
that's
brother.
What I was, yes. That's,
but
that's what I was doing.
The con artist dad, not the yeah. rich dad, yeah. right?
And then there, you have to have basement husband.
Oh, we're going to get the basement husband later. For sure.
Yeah. Oh, I know we will.
That was a fucking thing. Oh my God.
Well, that was the twist, man. That's where the movie literally takes a twist. Is you oh, think this family is
it literally takes a tumble
doing something, oh, and then soon. All of a sudden there's a man in the basement, and that's when it becomes a horror movie.
We're gonna, well, I actually don't. I think it's actually later that it becomes a horror movie.
I feel like it's still farcical at that point.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway. We'll get there. We'll get there. But first, we have to get to that point. So Kevin has a buddy who seems to be fairly well off. I don't know how Kevin's friends with this guy.
It seems
they
like,
went to school together, probably like yeah. high school, and Kevin obviously didn't go on to college, but this guy is.
But Kevin, I don't know enough about how college and stuff works in Korea.
Me either.
Because they mention that Kevin that he could definitely tutor because he took this test to be in the military.
Four times,
and he also,
and
like...
was, like, college-level...
College-level, yeah. and has applied to be in college, but, like, couldn't get a spot, or... It seems like it's a lot right. more competitive.
Yes, and it could be a money
or,
thing,
or
too.
Or political.
Like, it could be a financial means thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
But
I mean, it is here.
This also establishes that both the buddy and Kevin are of college age.
Yes.
So, Kevin... That's definitely I want to point that out. So, Kevin's buddy's like, here, I brought you a rock. And then he's like, hey, I'm tutoring this sophomore in high school English, and I'm leaving for college, and I don't want my other buddies who are college age to be hitting on her.
Because
so,
they're a bunch of scumbags.
Because
like
they are a bunch of scumbags. Kevin, you're not a scumbag.
Kevin, we don't hang out with you.
I mean,
so,
Kevin could have taken all those tests and stuff as a senior in high school. Or as a last year student in high school,
he took the military one four times. Though that kind of I think establishes that he's probably well out of high school at this point.
I don't.
It makes me wonder if the reason if it's a military test is the reason he's not in something physical.
I don't know. Maybe
he's clearly very uncoordinated, as we find yeah. out multiple
and
times.
I will say out of the four family members, despite the fact that they're all con artists. Kevin, but at the same time, I think Kevin uses that to his advantage, comes off the most sympathetic.
Because he's smart. He knows how to talk to
but
people.
But he's also, he
I don't think he's the smartest of the four.
I think, well, I'd say Jessica's the smartest.
Easily.
But I would say Kevin is the one that is the best at emotional connection.
Mm-hmm.
And coming off as vulnerable, whether he actually is or not.
So that's his skill, is emotional intelligence.
Yes.
Jessica's...
But also speaking English.
Well, that too.
Jessica is a bit of a carny.
Yeah.
But she's a caricature, like...
Because, like, just the idea, like, oh, did something happen in first grade? Totally just a thing out of nowhere.
No, she was so good at that.
But that's an old... The old carny trick.
Right.
But she probably read, because she's like, I just read, you know, about art therapy... And bullshitted the rest.
Oh, yeah.
So there was probably something in there, like, statistically, like, first grade is, like, when these things happen. So that's probably
right, but
where she
I will
got
say
that.
But it's also kind of like somebody who says a medium, and they're like, oh, is there an Edward?
Yeah, there's almost always an Edward.
Right.
I will say that if the movie hadn't taken the twist that it had taken, Jessica would have been my favorite out of the whole family. And I don't, she might still be, but, like...
I don't know. She got a little out of pocket with those peaches. That was a lot.
That was insidious.
To be fair, that the last go with the peaches was fair game.
Yes. Well, I was like, oh my God, the peaches. I thought she was going to grab the bottle. Look, we're going to get there.
Millions of peaches.
I thought she was going to grab the bottle of Voss.
Peaches.
The glass
oh,
bottle.
Oh, yeah.
And then when she pulled out the peaches, I was like, oh, that's okay. Funny. Anyway. So they're like, well, we need to you know, create some forged documents for you for certification. And so Jessica forges them, and then the dad's looking at him, and he has the line, does Oxford have a major in document forgery?
I think that's fucking great.
And we see the house for the first time when Kevin gets interviewed, and man, this house is cool.
Yeah.
I would live in this house.
I've seen houses. I mean, there was... I always like when they have houses like this and stuff. I watched some British show on HBO or something a couple of years ago, and it was another house that was this, like a, you know, another architect or artist that lived in the house that they designed. They love their bizarro staircases. But this one isn't so much bizarre, but it is very... You know what this was? This was a futuristic mansion version of the Brady House.
I mean, it was just modern minimalist design.
But it's very in tune with the Asian influenced modernism, where it's connecting with nature through minimalism.
It was very Frank Lloyd Wright.
But also, like, I loved the
and
way
not he, my style at all.
I loved the house, but I get that. I also loved the way he shot the house.
I mean, I love every
shot. Those big wide shots where you just let people come in and out in the different parts.
My favorite thing of what he does is depth.
Yeah,
depth blocking whatever. Like it, you get so much in every shot, and where everybody's standing means so much. Mm-hmm. And then you'll see somebody standing on the front doorstep. But you'll also see somebody like almost on the back porch. You get to see this shot, clear path.
The shot for me is the one where you see the stairwell and the kitchen, and you can just see the people moving through the different elements of the house. It's
very M.C. Escher.
It's so great. And we get the first look at the rich wife, which she's like passed out in the yard or something. What the fuck? This is the weirdest shot in the movie to me because like... After we meet her, like, they kind of reference that she's not the brightest.
Well, the friend does tell Kevin... Yeah, okay, yeah.
Right.
She's a dim.
But she doesn't come
she's
off
some
as
sort
dim.
Of... She, oh, yes, it does.
Later on,
naive,
there are
moments. Naive.
Naive, for sure.
They're both... Look, they're both... The both of these people are extremely naive in that...
They're gullible.
In that they don't know... They literally do not know how other people live.
Yes, that is, once again, going back to the class thing.
Yeah.
But also, she's not as dumb as they made her sound, though. Like, her watching Kevin during the first lesson, you can tell she's paying attention and taking in what he's doing as a teacher.
For what, 5 minutes?
Well, still, there are moments where she's not a moron.
She's not simple.
Right.
Yes, she is.
She's just...
She's
extremely naive.
Gullible.
She's a trophy wife of some kind because she's just like as sheltered as can be. She watches Kevin long enough to make sure like, okay, well, it's been 5 minutes. He hasn't tried to molest her. I guess I'll go make some tea.
But also, she comes from a world. From a world where that kind of thing probably doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So she doesn't think about it.
Yeah.
Well, again.
And they mention this later, like, oh, rich people are so easy to fool because they don't have to deal with bad things ever.
Yeah.
So they don't, it's just, I mean, even us in our middle classness, there are things that happen
in
life.
You.
Yeah, I am definitely not a middle class.
There are things in our life that we've never had to think about.
Sure. No, I mean, we as three white people definitely have a level of privilege that protects us. As well, not as much as these guys do, but yes, it's a valid point. There was an interesting line during the math lesson where he's like, or the English lesson, sorry, where he's like, I saw you went back to question 24 and got stuck, and he goes, you know, you lose that momentum and you die in an exam, right? And it was like a nice little. I mean, it's a little bit of foreshadowing now when we think about it.
Just keep swimming.
Just keep swimming. But it was an interesting first lesson.
But it goes to show, like, he actually is able to do this.
Yes, he is capable.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, how he gets there might be a scam. But it's like I said in our text thread or whatever, like it's not like they don't provide the service.
No, they do.
I don't know why I've got a thing in my throat, but Kevin,
cicada.
When he comes into this house, does he get it in slightly nefarious ways? He's not qualified on paper, mm-hmm. but he is qualified.
Yeah.
And he gets a reference from a friend who knows that he can come in and do the job. When he gets Jessica, that's bullshit. She doesn't really know what she's doing, but...
Fair.
Yeah,
but,
I mean,
but apparently the kid is faking anyway, so it doesn't really matter. Then it starts to get... You start to get a little more...
Hey, the dad makes those corners.
You get a little more nefarious when, yes, mom and dad can do their job, but now they've hurt other people to get their parents in the
if
house.
The con ended at Kevin getting the job, then this movie is innocuous. Right, yeah. It's an innocuous thing.
Yeah.
Right, it was an open position. It didn't hurt anybody. He knows what he's doing. Eventually the whole making out with her was going to be an issue. But
hey, she put the first moves on him.
Oh, yeah. She was relentless. She wanted it. That was terrible.
Look, I get where you're going with it, but at the same time, like, they're both teenagers, I'm not as bothered by
it. I'm not sure that he's a teenager.
He could be 20, 21.
I mean, not, like, drastic.
No, it's not. Yeah, he's not 30.
Yeah, and she's not 14.
She kind of looks 14.
To be fair, Jessica looks like she's 15.
Yeah.
Except for the smoking like a mad person.
Yeah. Again, I don't know where first, second year, I guess they say sophomore.
They say sophomore.
Generally, that's like 16.
Yeah, maybe it's different in Korea, yeah. I don't know.
She feels closer to 15 than 16, just visually.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they cast her that way as well.
And the hair is done in that
way. And even
the
way she acts, she's got a very innocent, like, first love kind of thing mm-hmm. going on. So then we meet the other kid as Kevin's getting ready to leave, and he's shooting arrows at everybody. I'm like, yeah, this kid's awesome.
You thought that kid was awesome?
Dude, I will say, I think he, out of everyone in this movie, is the most innocent.
He's also the only one really enjoying his best life.
That is true. He is enjoying his best life.
He's also the one that noticed that there was something off.
Also, he's kind of a talented painter. Like, I mean, it's not like your traditional, like, realistic painting, but it's interesting and weird.
Okay.
In a fun way.
It's not your typical 7-year-old.
No,
whatever.
It's not.
It's because he's in the schizophrenic zone.
They said something bad happened. Something tragic happened to him in the first grade, and I assumed he was in the first grade. Like, he looks like he's 5, so.
Yeah. Well, I think they cast both of the rich children young, it feels like.
Yeah, you want as innocent as humanly possible, I suppose.
And then we get the when Jessica comes in for an interview and they're looking at it. No, it was him. Kevin was looking at the painting and he was like, this is nice. Is this a chimpanzee? And she goes, no, it's a self-portrait. I'm like, that's great. And he's like, I know somebody that knows somebody. I'm immediately like, oh, it's going to be his sister. And so they have her come in and then we have the conversation with Kevin and the daughter, the rich daughter. And she's like, oh, who's that? Is that your girlfriend? And you can just tell out his way. He's like, girl.
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't lying. He's like, no, this is absolutely not my girlfriend.
Right. And it's very clear immediately that she's into him. Which,
gee, you think?
Sounds like she's into all of her tutors.
I was going to say, it sounds like she is a little bit of a tutor slut.
Well, she's sheltered in that she may go to an all-girls private school.
That's true,
interaction she gets with boys.
And she's literally having a boy delivered to her. So
well,
I guess
there was the whole mirror of when Kevin gave her the speech of he took her pulse.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, you know, the heart doesn't lie or whatever. Like, I can tell your pulse is racing, you're nervous or whatever. So later, that's mirrored when she touches his arm
mm-hmm.
and feels his pulse. Like, okay, you do like me. And then they kiss.
Yep, he kisses a sophomore.
He gets older and they stay the same age.
plenty of sophomores in high school dating 18 and 19-year-olds when I was a sophomore in high school.
All right.
So we get the lesson, the art lesson. And at the end, what I found interesting was that the son bowed to Jessica. I don't know if you noticed that. And it was the only time that we really saw him kind of in a state of not madness.
Mm-hmm.
A non-manic moment.
Right. And it was like, oh, that's cool.
Well, Jessica put on a whole character. And it was very, no, the parents cannot be in there.
Yeah.
It was very austere and like how you would probably imagine someone like that coming off, you know?
And, she's an instructor at the Red Room.
And I think the little kid, you know, he responded to that.
He did. And then
because no one is authoritarian at all in his life.
Exactly.
And then, yeah, here comes the Long Island Medium part where she's like, did something happen to him in first grade? And I just put down, like, she's quite the good con artist. Like, Jessica is, like, she is, what you call it, the movie that we referenced earlier.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Thank you, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. She's Michael Caine.
Well, we find out later that she became such a good actress because she's earned quite a bit of money being a wedding guest and like fake bridesmaid and wedding guest and stuff.
She gets bonuses for catching the bouquet.
Yep.
That was such a weird little thing.
I'm like, that's actually really fun and I would totally do that.
But she is fantastic as a con artist. Like if they had made a movie of just like Jessica the con artist, that'd be a fun movie
to watch. I'd watch a limited series of that, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I think I'd like that in 40-minute intervals, probably.
Yeah, I could see that. That'd be fun. So then they're like, oh, it's raining. You should get a ride. Let's let the driver give you a ride home. And the driver's like, where do you live? And she's like, just take me to the train station. He goes, oh, no, I'll take you home. Like, and he wasn't being creepy. The way
he was
said,
not. He
the
was
way
literally,
I said it made it sound creepy.
You made it sound. But he was just like, no, I will. It's raining. I'm happy to take you all the way home.
He did very insistent about it. And she's like, no. And then she takes her panties off, which I'm like watching it. I'm just like, what the fuck is
yeah,
she doing?
Yeah, it's a very out of nowhere thing to do until. And it makes you wonder how, like, and she does it, like, this almost the second she's in the car.
Right.
So mm-hmm. How long has this been premeditated?
Well, like, yeah, she knew once she was in the house that she was getting everybody into the house. But, yeah, like, we don't, as the viewer, know why she's doing that in the moment. And then I kind of figured when she left them there that I'm like, okay, she's setting something up.
Yeah, I was going to say,
first thought was setting the husband up.
Yeah. So then the husband finds him. And what he shares it with his wife, which I didn't think he was going to share the panties with his wife. I thought that was...
Hey, what better way to throw the scent off yourself?
Yes. Oh, for sure. But also their reactions to it were so interestingly different. Like, he thinks it's hilarious. And he's like, look at this guy sitting. I'm like, I'd rather he wasn't banging on the seat that I ride to work every day, but... that dog. And she's just like, oh my God.
Well, because he doesn't know that Jessica was taken home in the car.
Right.
So he didn't. So he just assumes that this guy's driving around this nice car thinking like, all right.
But yeah, I mean.
But he does later. He's like, and what kind of, who leaves their panties behind? Clearly mm-hmm. someone that's on drugs. He's banging meth heads in the car.
Yeah, but even then, he's still not, doesn't seem that mad about it.
He's a man. Of course he's not that mad about it.
I don't know. I think I'd still be mad about it. But it does play
into that
trope.
But
I mean,
that
brotherly, like, oh, yeah, he's getting laid. Good for him.
He's
getting some. The only reason I'm mad is because why couldn't he do it? And he literally says, why couldn't he do it in his own seat instead of dripping his jizz in mine? Like, oh, God.
It's also, you know, he's very much a... a part of the still a vestige of that Mad Men patriarchy.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, like,
well, they're in Korea, so yeah.
fair.
We also get that there's...
4B, whatever movement, is real over there.
We're getting that there's eavesdropping happening during this conversation. And once again, with that beautiful, like, an interesting shot of the staircase versus the kitchen.
Which I just realized mirrors the... shot where they're the staircase to the basement.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
but God. It's obviously far less gorgeous.
Right. So now they've got it. They fire the driver and gives dad the end to be a driver. I like that they go to the car dealership to help him learn how to use a modern car and use the GPS and stuff.
Maybe not even a modern car, but just a luxury car, probably.
Well, because he was struggling with a touchscreen, so that's why I was thinking a modern car. Because even some of the cheaper modern cars now, most of them now have the touchscreens and the GPS and everything. So.
And also the luxury cars have more than a Kia.
So we get that. We get the test driving with the dad and the coffee cup.
Yeah, because he's like, I'm not testing you. I just needed to get out of the office for a while.
But also, I'm going to hold this very full coffee, right, coffee cup while you drive.
You see it later, and you just see him look down at, you know, the coffee cup several times, and it's not sloshing, and mm-hmm. it's fine. And so again, the way they got Dad into the job, nefarious. But Dad can actually do the job well.
They all do a nice little crash course of everything that they need to do. They're sitting there watching that video of the pizza box folding, and they do, like, you know what they are? They're like people on Twitter where they read an article and all of a sudden they're an expert and they need to go and tweet about it.
Or they're just like people that don't want to pay a service person to come to the house to fix something, so they watch a YouTube video about it and do it themselves.
I would say it falls
that's fair too.
I think it's they're doing their due diligence to know enough mm-hmm. to get them in the door.
Right.
But yeah, we see a little bit of a slippage with the dad as a driver later on with the set, like he almost ran into a truck when it was raining.
Mm-hmm. To be fair, the truck pulled out in front of him, but he was also kept looking behind him.
Yes, and he was doing that a lot during the entirety of the movie while he was driving. Yes.
They
pointed it out later, mm-hmm. so that was part of it. So I don't think they're going to the part of going, okay, we're fully, you know, equipped for these jobs, but we're equipped enough to be able to get
They've all got the knowledge base, but none of them have the formal training. And there is something to be said for that formal training of, okay, you know how to drive a car, or you know how to make art, but here's how to actually do it in a formal setting. Like, you can know how to teach things, but putting you in school, you've got to have some basis of knowledge of how to handle different students and stuff like that versus, oh, I know English.
Yeah. So then, we're like, okay, three are in. Mom's next. That means the housekeeper, which we find out peaches are forbidden. Because she's allergic and she breaks out in a rash if she gets even a little bit of peach fuzz on her.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're immediately like,
I gotta just say, that's such an ingenious device.
It really, how they used it.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, the allergy he purposely picked a fruit that you can take parts of and no one will ever notice.
Oh, see, that's not the part that I think is ingenious. It's how they use the allergic reaction that I think is ingenious.
Well, that part of it too.
Right. The fact that they're like, oh, I'm going to happen to run into her at the hospital where she's coughing up a lung and set up where she's coughing up a lung later and say she's got tuberculosis? Holy shit.
Well, keep in mind.
And they rehearsed the response of, does anybody still get tuberculosis anymore? Like, they knew she was going to ask that question, so they rehearsed the response.
And they even
that.
Had a coach that like, oh, no, you're acting too big here. Like, pull it back.
That was hilarious.
It was so great.
But as far as the, oh my God, now I lost what I was going to say. But not just the knowing, what the response was going to be, but I don't know.
But also, something that I thought was interesting is and I think this is something that happens all the time, but the rich people are so non-confrontational, they won't even tell their employees why they're firing them. They're like, oh, we just won't mention that. We'll think of some bullshit reason
to
let them
say.
Go. So then there's never even a conversation of,
you have TB.
I don't have TB, or I've never had sex with anybody in the car. Like, there's no way for them to defend themselves or anything. But it's also a coward's way out. Like, I'm not going to mention why I'm actually firing you. I'm just going to make up an excuse.
Well, and you have to assume that housekeeper's been there. Obviously,
she's been there since before the family.
Right. So she's seen a lot of these people come and go, and she's probably seen why and how they react. So the idea that she would, I guess they do know about the allergy.
Yeah.
But, I guess it doesn't dawn, like, how the hell would that peach even get in here?
Well, you hear her on the phone, when the dad is taking the selfie, she's on the phone in the emergency room. She's like, no, I haven't been around any peaches. I don't know. I'm very careful about it. I have no idea what this is.
Yep.
So she didn't know what was going on. Well,
I was just, no, it wasn't that. I was more thinking, like, would she keep that a secret from the employee? Because you don't want to show any kind of weakness.
They knew.
But
they knew.
But they did know. That's right.
So I feel like also, you feel bad for the driver, but not like super bad. But you feel bad for the housekeeper.
Oh, absolutely. Because even they sort of felt bad for the driver at first. Like,
yeah,
well,
they
he's
brought
good
it up.
Looking.
Yeah, I'm sure he's got another job somewhere else.
But she's like, you know, she's an older lady, and
this has been her home for
exactly.
Decades.
And these are other service workers, like.
Also the dogs.
Aren't that much higher status than our protagonists. They just happen to actually have steady work, but now they don't. So
yeah, that slope I imagine is pretty slippery then.
It seems like it.
And like, we even see some slippery slopes later.
Yeah.
So then we get...
That's not a racist comment. I just wanted to let you know.
I didn't think it was racist at all.
Okay.
Oh, I see what you mean now, though. Yeah,
I want to make that clear. That's like, fair. I'm talking about something
talking
wet.
About the American bison.
So then we see how they get the mom in as the housekeeper, which is they establish the dad gives the rich dad the card about the service that reached out to him.
Yeah.
And they answer the phone, and she gets all this information, including a copy of the property title, which I'm like, well, they're just going to freaking bilk these people for everything, aren't they?
Well, my favorite part was he gives... the rich dad, a business card, which you know Jessica designed.
Yeah,
and he's like, oh, you can tell that this place is classy by the design. This is an excellent card.
Well, you can see the card was like a really
it passed
thick
the
stock.
Patrick Bateman test.
Yeah,
passed
exactly.
The Patrick Bateman test, yes.
That's exactly what I thought. Yep.
Nice card.
So yeah, so now the whole family is working there. And who was it? Was it the son or the rich son or the rich daughter was like, they all smelled the same.
It was the son.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God.
But that's what I mentioned earlier. I was like, he was the first one to like notice something was off because he's like, the smell. They all smell the same.
Yeah.
And it would be something like that. It would be something that he would notice because he's pretty much in his own world and he's not paying attention to what they say, what anyone's saying.
It's such a fun way for them to get caught is through the smell.
But that's the kind of thing a kid would probably be more likely to notice.
Right.
Especially since he's around them. He's around all of them.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the dad doesn't really...
He's really only
Jessica
around the driver.
You're right.
Yeah. But we never... It's interesting because on one hand, that makes sense. But on the other hand, you don't know if it's a bad smell until later. It kind of
when
is like...
When the dad
it
starts
might,
talking shit.
It might not be a good smell. But just, like, being around somebody, like... There's a certain contingent of people here in the Chicagoland area that a lot of them smell like Suavitel. Because they all use Suavitel. And it's not a bad smell. It's just Suavitel fabric softener has a very distinctive smell, and I can tell when someone has used it.
I was thinking more like Axe body spray.
Well, that's kind of a bad smell. Body spray but I'm talking just normal people going about their lives doing laundry.
So they're back home, they're having a conversation, they're like, well, do we need to just, like, each do laundry separately? What's going on?
And then, use separate soap, and yeah.
And then we get, because...
But then they're like, no, it's because we live in the basement.
Yeah, we got basement smell. But then we get...
On the inside of a sewer, for fuck's sake.
Mm-hmm. We get piss guy outside, and they're like, that's it, it's over. And so they get into the... What I can only call piss versus water fight, which was so stupid and fun. Like, the son going out, Kevin going out with the water bottle trying to, and the guy's pissing on him. And then the dad throws the bucket of water, and we just get slow motion of the bucket of water missing the pissing guy and hitting Kevin right in the face.
Well, Jessica takes this beautiful slow motion video.
It's
like,
such
it's very
a great
artistic.
Thing. And also, once again, a little bit of foreshadowing with the Kevin getting pissed on. Now that sounds terrible. But, yeah.
Well, I think just the idea that any, like, it can run in the window. Like,
right.
You don't, he's not like right there, but you know it can trickle.
Yes.
You don't, that's why they don't want the guy pissing out there.
Of course. But it also, you know, when we talk about the flood later, it's foreshadowing of that a little bit. So then, yeah, the rich family's like, we're going camping. So the house is going to be empty. And, of course, that leads to them going, oh, we're going to house party this shit.
I guess we're
going
to camp out in the
house. Yep, we're going to camp out in the house. And we see Kevin finding the diary and Jessica taking a bubble bath and all of the things. And them drinking every bottle of booze in the house. And that was the one thing I was like,
they're going to figure that one out.
They're going to, yeah, I'm like, they're going to figure out where did all of our booze go? You have to buy that again.
I don't know. Although, because it seems like they would have, they probably have more than they do. I think the implication is that they have way more than they would ever know what to do with.
To be honest, yeah, a lot of rich people, they don't know what they have in their inventory.
I mean, if it was like stuff hidden in their basement cellar full of stuff, yeah, but if it's just bottles that have been sitting out.
I would imagine they were smart in their selection.
But also they...
I would hope so.
They may not... I mean, my mom has had a job like this for people like this, and they don't necessarily know what all's in their inventory because she was the one doing all the shopping. So...
True.
So, I mean, if it's a special bottle of something, they'll notice that's gone eventually. But if it's just like, you know, Classe Azul, that's a nice bottle, but they go through that, whatever, we'll buy another one.
That sounds great.
So we get these conversations with the family now. We get Kevin's proclamation that once the daughter is of age, he's going to ask her out.
Hey, man, his buddy had the same idea.
And so, they mentioned that, like, oh, the family's so nice, and the mom is like, yeah, I'd be nice too if I was that rich.
Right.
Well, that's where the conversation of rich people are very naive. Like, they're always nice because they don't have any baggage, basically.
Yeah.
Well, it's an obliviousness. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
which, you know, a lot of rich people are not nice.
No.
That's new money people a lot of times are not nice. The old money people, I don't know. But
it depends.
It still depends on the person.
It does. I've met plenty of old money who are old bastards.
Mm-hmm. Like Scrooge McDuck.
At least he had a quality to him.
Right. So then the doorbell rings and everybody's immediately like, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the viewer, you're like, yeah, fuck. And of course, it's pouring down rain and it's a very soaked old housekeeper.
And delirious, seemingly. Like, is she?
Well, we learn why she's like so worked up.
But it's a very drastic attitude.
She seems like she's on drugs.
Right. Yeah. She seems like, oh, was that peach fuzz or meth? Because right. She's nuts.
I originally thought it was because she, like, my first instinct was she misses the dogs.
Okay. Your brain went somewhere very different than this movie did. The dogs are all,
like, friendly and adorable. And, like, she seemed kind of like a sad old lady. Not old lady, but, like, you know, like a...
No, to me it was she's like she definitely left something in this house. I don't know what it is, but
well, no. Once she said I left something in the basement, and I'm like, okay, what the fuck is she getting in the what is it that? Yeah, once she said that, that's when I started to go, like, okay, what's going on?
It's definitely not something good.
I didn't think she left her husband in the basement.
Well, of course not.
I just assumed the first time I saw this that when she was like hysterical like that, that she just wanted her job back. Like, I'm gonna do anything I can to get this job back.
I could understand her being that
way. To the point of not making sense.
If it would have been like a couple weeks maybe, and she's mm-hmm. been like, but like it's the next day practically. No, well, it's hard to say.
I think it's been about a couple weeks. A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause yeah, I mean that's why she's desperate.
I guess that's true.
Cause her husband is starving in the basement.
Yep.
Oh my
god! It shouldn't be that funny, Nick.
Well, no, it's so absurd that it's funny.
If there is that crank in there, why the fuck didn't he?
Because it was wedged up. That piece of metal was wedged underneath. The shelf.
Oh, that's he couldn't
right.
get out.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's
So they finally are like, okay, come in. And she's like, hey, you want to come down to the basement with me to see what I left?
No.
What the fuck?
And then the pathway to the basement is between those two bookcases, and it's just pitch black.
Well, that's, yeah, like, that entrance to the basement is wild.
That's fucking freaky. I would not want that in my house.
I would want a door there.
Well, yeah, but I don't want some passage where, like, the two steps in, you're gone. That's like, you fair. Walked into an abyss.
Right. So we get the she opened, like, she has to, like, struggle to get the bookcase open because that metal was there. She pulled, finally get it out.
Okay, no, there was more to it than that.
Well, she didn't get it out.
Well, when she comes, like, when the mom comes down
mom
and sees
comes
her,
downstairs
she's, like,
and sees her with her feet on the wall and her hands on the bookcase pushing.
Props.
And they're like, what is happening right now?
Props to
and
that
then
old
she
lady.
Yanks that thing out and it moves and the old lady falls. Like, there was a, it was
yeah, it was a whole
ridiculous.
Thing.
That props to her for being able to get herself into that position in the first place.
Yeah, that takes some core work.
And,
yeah,
and she's clearly like an old bag lady now. So
yes, she lost all of her stamina in the last 2 weeks.
It was the peach fuzz.
There
so,
you go.
So yeah, so they get the doors revealed, and I'm sure, you know, the first time you watch, you're like, oh, what the fuck? And then, like, she opens the door, she's like, honey, and I'm like,
can we just give her props for the fall? Like,
sure.
The fall and the thud is like...
I mean, that's the fall you want to give her props for?
It's mostly because, like, with all of what... There's so many tone shifts. And just to all of a sudden, here's some slapstick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like... It helps take some of the air out of that balloon a little bit. But then, like, you think you're getting some sort of relief or something. And then, oh, wait, we just uncovered this.
So... Yeah, we get down there, and, like, she's like, oh, my God, are you okay? He's like, I'm really hungry. And she gives him a bottle, like a baby bottle of milk.
It probably was, like, not Infamil, but might have been, like, an Ensure protein shake
right,
or something.
In a baby bottle with a nipple, and he's sitting there sucking on that bottle, and I'm like...
Yeah, this basement husband was weird.
Dude, basement husband is a vibe, for sure.
Basement husband... is a lifestyle and a state of mind that
yes.
I don't think I could ever understand because, I mean, that's your huddled mass right
well,
there. Just a dude who sits in a corner in a and enjoys it no less. Like he really
yeah,
actually he's like, this is the best I can have.
Well, and he's been down there, we find out, for
four years.
He, as a character and in his his mannerisms and thought processes, are the things that, to me, most parallel some of the things we see in Squid Game. And so that, like, that's the big connection to me, is his character.
A cabin fever?
No, like, the weird Squid Game. If you haven't seen Squid Game, you don't really understand, like, that the sense of humor of his character, like, around his character... And some of his actions fit into kind of the mindset of Squid Game as a whole.
Also, no one eats a banana that way.
Well, nobody uses their forehead to tell the owner of the house in Morse code that he's there and he's there for
him. It's not like he was tied up the whole time.
Dude.
Like, well, maybe he, you know what? I think every time he hit that, he was
but then
tied
we,
up.
We're jumping ahead a little bit, but we find out that the reason he's down there is he's hiding from debt collectors. And I'm like, dude. I feel you.
Mm-hmm.
But also that he is kind of just like the family's dad in that he did this and it didn't work out. And he tried this and it didn't work out. And he tried this and it didn't work out. And I'm like, oh, that's beautiful.
And, you know, the wife couldn't move him into the house with her, but she could move him into the house with her.
Yeah, she could harbor him.
Right. And so then we get the family kind of tumbling
and
down
the
stairs.
And let's be real. I've seen worse basement apartments than that.
I mean, was there a shower?
No, I don't think so. Yeah. No, because when we get to see the effect of his stench later. but, all right, all things, like, then again, we don't really see a shower in the sewer apartment.
There was a shower or a sink or something, because it was a bunker, so I'm sure they had a way to bathe down there.
I hope so, but I didn't see one, so I kind of clocked that.
So it does make me want, like, all right, which would you rather live in? The
bunker.
The sewer or the bunker?
Because I'd rather stand
to
pee. It's also just, it just feels cleaner.
And not to mention...
And safer.
And not to mention, in a pinch, I mean, there's a really rich house right above me.
Yeah, he comes out of
except for when he gets trapped because of the piece of metal.
Yeah. There is an occasional resource though.
Yeah,
but he comes out of the basement.
An emergency exit of some sort.
They enjoy that house together when the family's gone. Like they mention that later. Like, oh, you remember the two of us standing in that big window in the sunlight, listening to music and dancing, and like, so they do enjoy the house and they
love each other.
Like, they do.
Capital L, capital O, capital V, capital E, love.
But also that is something that I noticed about our protagonist family. As chaotic as they all are, they...
Yeah, now you'll have to read... Now you'll have to tell me which one you mean. Because I'm not entirely sure the protagonist is here.
They are... well, I...
Kevin's family.
Kevin's family. Okay. The question of who the villain is very... But the protagonists, they are the protagonist family. This is told through their POV, so that's why I'm calling them protagonists.
They're also antagonists. And
catastrophists. They have a family bond, too. Like, they all live in this little place together. They're all a team trying to make money. Yeah. Like,
they're more like a band of brothers.
They're like the Partridge Family, but criminals.
There you go.
That would have been a better show.
Oh, 100%.
Come on. Danny was a fucking... he was definitely stealing.
The family falling down the stairs and the old housekeeper recording them saying dad.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I'm going to send it. And then the whole standoff, and they somehow get upstairs. I can't remember how they got upstairs. And they all start fighting for the phone.
Well, they go upstairs and then
she's making them pose.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Her and the husband are sitting there eating the snacks. She's giving him a massage, and he's eating the snacks, and she's got them posed.
Meanwhile,
like,
basement
if you move,
dad
I'm going to send this.
Meanwhile, basement dad is deliriously hovering his thumb over the send button on this picture.
Yeah. And then so there's a fight. They try to get the phone from her. They do get the phone from her eventually. But, like, the peaches get used, which was great.
Oh, my God.
And then, of course, as soon as, like, in the middle of the fight, the phone rings. And as soon as the phone rings, I'm like, I mean, it's been raining. They're supposed to be camping. I'm like, they're coming back. Right. I knew that was going to happen.
Well, so who else is calling?
She's like, oh, you're there? Oh, good. Start making some ramen. We're gonna be there in 8 minutes, and I'm just like 8 minutes.
If you start
boiling
the water now, the noodles will be done just when we get there.
I'm like eight minutes.
God, now I want to keep track of like everything that they said to anyone, and like and just we should rank like every statement by insulting.
Like, oh man, because
that one comes off as like kind of innocuous, but then like just think about that. If you start boiling this, like, well, thanks for the implication right off the bat and the expectation that you are, in fact, going to be expecting this ramen. Oh, and there's sirloin. Yeah, let me get on that, too, because, you know, cubes of meat will cook in fucking no time.
There's a line later on that it's even more infuriating.
No, I know. I know which one you're going to say.
But, yeah, like, and the problem is with the rich family is there's no... ill intent.
But there's also no self-awareness.
Yes,
there's no empathy. They're not hateful at all.
There's no empathy, but they also don't know they're causing harm.
And don't know that they're just oblivious to other people.
Right. Well, to other people outside of their class level.
But outside of even those people and what, unless it's what they can do for them.
Right. Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, at the end of the day, though, aside from... I'm calling at 3 a.m. or whatever time it was. I expect you to be up answering the phone and making me ramen.
Right.
If they hadn't gotten that heads up, they'd all just be in the living room and the movie would have ended right there and then they'd all be in jail.
It's not that. It's just the idea that expectation is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. She should, the very least, she knew that she figured I should
probably be asleep.
She called because I need you to wake up and start this ramen.
Yeah. Anyway, so we get that.
Because Junior's fucking
this
hungry.
Is something that happened to my mom a lot when she had the job that she had.
I'm angry for your mom.
And my mom didn't live there. So they'd call her and be like, hey, the husband, we're in our summer or winter home in Florida, but the husband had to come back for business. So he's going to stay the night there. Can you just come in and make the bed for him? And my mom got to the point where she's like, no, he is a grown man. I'm not going to drive 30 minutes to make the bed for him. He'll be okay. And they went back and forth about stuff like that a few times.
Right.
But she was invaluable enough. It never was a huge issue. But my mom definitely had to put her foot down a few times.
Yeah, and that's kind of the start of this feeling. So then we get the trying to take the older couple back down to the basement, the rapid attempt to clean up, put the diary back, all the things. And then as the family comes in, we get the old housekeeper coming up the stairs and the mom just mule kicking her back down the stairs.
Yeah, the no look.
Just the no look mule kick. And I'm always like, holy fuck, did she just kill her? I literally thought she was dead.
I you know what? Having seen it, I'm like, I still don't understand how she's not.
I mean, it is what killed her.
But I'm glad. But I don't want to say glad. That's not the word I'm looking for. But
that old woman was hearty.
But you needed it.
It was eventually what killed
her. But you needed her to survive
long enough. Yes.
And having seen this movie, this is my second viewing. I actually still didn't remember that initial kick down the stairs. Like, that moment isn't what killed her.
Right.
Like, I knew that's how she died, but I didn't realize that it was later in the concussion and, like, all the stuff. Like,
it's completely understandable because, I mean, she bashed her head against cement.
Dude, that blood was brutal.
Oh, yeah.
And there wasn't even a bounce. It was just when something just stops like that. It's like, oh.
So then everybody goes to bed but the mom of the rich family. Because they're just like, fuck it. And so the mom's like, fine, I'll eat the soup. And then so she's
I'll eat the soup.
She's sitting there eating the soup, talking to mom.
Wait. We didn't get to the line then that I thought you were saying.
Oh, no, my line's later.
Okay. First, the mom says, oh, well, why don't you just eat it? And then she's like, oh. Well, maybe my husband will want it. There's sirloin in here.
Did clock that?
Like, you are not good enough for some sirloin. Cubed sirloin.
But then later, the daughter gets mad because she's like, "I wanted ramen. You didn't give me any ramen.
You didn't offer it to me at once.
At all."
Hey, man, her point is valid.
Yeah.
She's like, you made it for my brother, and then he didn't want it, so you offered it to dad, but then you didn't offer it. You just ate it yourself because it
almost,
was there.
You almost offered it to the housekeeper, but
who
not
is
me.
Definitely not worth, sir? Is that sirloin worthy?
Am I not sirloin worthy in this family?
I'm going to make out with Kevin.
I'm the chuck roast of this family. Damn it.
But I was like, yeah, that's valid, man. Like,
it is totally valid.
Yeah.
But so she's eating, and she talks about the birthday and the incident.
Ah, the incident.
And the young son in first grade going down to eat his cake while everybody's asleep. And, look who it is. It's Basement Dad.
But I did love the shot because you knew and she's like, he saw a ghost. She's it's Basement Dad. But just the POV of what the little boy saw. Because, that black void and just this head rising up out of the black void that looked exactly like his creepy drawings that he'd been making. I was like, okay, that's a fun
don't
visual.
Forget about what Basement Dad saw. He saw a kid covered in cake.
Covered in frosting. Oh my god. And then we get the worst possible bit of parenting I have ever seen in my life.
You're spoiled for choice in this one.
Well, no. Letting their young child set up a teepee-style tent in the backyard in the middle of a storm.
A storm, bad enough.
It was raining.
No, there was lightning earlier in the storm. There was lightning. There was established lightning.
And not to mention that this resulted in flooding. And
not there.
Not there.
No, but I'm saying it's a bad enough storm where, I don't know, where it would flood.
Right.
And we see that as they're walking down those stairs, too, where it's really gushing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's when Kevin knew. He stopped and looked at his feet, and I think that's when he realized, like, this is going
to
be bad.
Not to mention the message that, these people in the high tower,
mm-hmm.
can camp out in their teepee in the backyard in this weather.
They were like, let's sleep on the couch so we can keep an eye on
them. This is one of my favorite parts
of
the
movie. Well, that's not what I meant.
And then have really awkward sex.
I was meaning more like the water, like all that basically all shit rolls downhill.
Yeah, but let's talk about the awkward.
Absolutely.
Because that was fantastic. And I think I still think this movie's kind of a comedy. Up through the sex scene.
I wonder if it's a Korean film thing, because, like I said, I've seen several Korean movies, and obviously not all of them have had sex scenes, but now I'm realizing that the couple that have, it's been really awkward. Like, every time, it's always just strange. Like, it's kind of painful to watch, because you're just like, what is happening
right
now?
Hey, just be glad I picked a movie that didn't have any gratuitous boobs.
Just be glad you weren't stuck under the table with your children while that was
listening. Because he's like, "Oh, do you still?" Well, that's when they start out having the conversation.
God, yeah, do you still have the panties?
Before the sex, they start out having the conversation about the smell again.
Yes, and the dad's smell.
That's the next.
Laying under there listening to it, and he just snips him. Do I smell? And then, the weird, awkward sex. And then, do you still have those cheap panties? But if you put those on, I'll get so hard. And it's like, ooh.
You just kind of glossed over something else. And I feel like this is maybe an underrated turning point in the film. When the dad smells his shirt. And it's not like it ends there.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it's a recurring theme.
No, but I mean,
it gets more intense each time.
As he's going, it's like, oh, it's like this, like old cabbage or whatever, and just talking about how horrid it is.
Yeah, it's when you boil a rag, it smells
radish. I think he says
radish
radish or something.
And
like.
Then he's like, I smell it on the subway sometimes.
Yeah, and you see rage building.
Essentially, he's describing. I'm doing air quotes here. What poor people smell like.
Yeah.
Basically. To him, anyway.
Oh, and equating them as sub.
Mm.
Right. So, after all of that and the awkward... I wouldn't even call it fornication, because they don't... At least we don't see them actually have sex. It's more just, like, pleasuring each other.
I would say that would qualify as heavy petting.
I would call it
heavier petting.
Double hand jobs, I think, is what happened.
Bobert Beetlejuicing.
Wow.
And we can just call it Beetlejuicing.
No, we will not.
What would that imply?
Yeah. Wait, Michael Keaton involved?
Fine, Boberting then.
Boberting, sure. They finally get out when the kid...
The kid walkies while they're
asleep. While the dad is trying to escape, like laying on the floor still as possible.
Slow worm.
Mom texts them, right. Hey, everybody's passed out. You can leave now. So they all crawl out and then...
It's like emergency.
Walkie.
They almost get caught.
Oh, when the phone vibrated earlier. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because the daughter is texting Kevin.
She's like, are you up? And he's like, yeah, under the table.
Would you like to be?
What?
Check out my parents. This is weird.
But we get that moment of dad almost getting caught. Like, I'm like,
that was such a strange scene where he just ceased movement.
Fully ceased
movement.
And
is laying on the floor, which that scene.
And his legs are still in the shot.
Yep.
Like,
that scene
if they had turned their heads at all.
Yeah.
That scene was in the trailer, I'm pretty sure, of him laying there and then him pushing himself. So, like, it looks horrific when you don't know what's happening. Yeah, and even when you do know what's happening, it's like, what is happening?
I can see why you would think Ju-on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But,
again, the house, the use of space is so fucking great.
It really is. They finally do get out, and dad's like, look, nothing happened, like, talking about the incident with the other couple. He's like, you two don't need to worry about it, right? So they make their way home, and the closer they get home, the more the flooding is, and we soon realize that
there's so many stairs. Like, yeah. Just the...
It's like the oblongs.
But the descent, going down and going down, yeah, and going down and going down. Yeah. So many
again,
stairs.
Again, to show just how much higher up these uh-huh. rocks are.
So, yeah, it becomes very clear that everything is flooded, their home is flooded, and it's the sewer that is flooded. So they're literally wading through piss and shit to get to their homes. And the dad's like, you stay, I'm going to go. They still follow.
Yeah, because he said, like... You know, they're, what is happening? And he's like, this is all sewer water. You stay there.
And we get, during this moment, my favorite visual, even though, like, I love all the visuals of the house, my favorite visual of the entire movie, which is Jessica smoking a cigarette while sitting on top of the erupting toilet.
I feel like that says something about you.
I just think it's
That's
so...
a weird fetish you have there.
It's so striking as a thing.
It's a... very, it's a visual representation of just losing your last fuck. Like, it's yeah. complete resignation. She's like, I'm just gonna sit here and smoke my last cigarette on top of this toilet.
Well, it's
spewing sewer water because yeah. I can't do anything else.
It's her one last kind of like one
moment of pleasure.
One moment of bliss that I can take from this is that, oh, thank you. At least a cigarette.
At
is
least
dry.
I have this. Yeah. Right.
And
while the toilet is literally erupting under her ass.
Well, you know, to be fair, you should light a match.
Oh God. I will say that I think through the sex, like I said, through the sex scene, I think it's still a comedy. Even with the...
Well, I think even that is...
It's there's comedic, yes.
There's comedic elements.
I think that the horror really starts once we see the flooding. Because it's when...
The music changes.
It's when our gut starts to... At least for me, it's when my gut starts to drop on the movie a little bit. Mm. Like, that to me is when it swings. Because And part of it is the frenetic energy changes, right? And so before, it's like a very... You said slapstick earlier. Very slapstick, very kind of Three Stooges-y... You know, like frenetic energy.
Well, and everybody's and the acting is a little bit over,
right?
Just a tad.
Especially the rich mom's acting.
Oh,
like,
sure.
She's so over the top with everything.
But this is the moment when that tone changes, and there's still frenetic energy in this movie, but it has a more serious undertone to it.
It's focused in a different way, and. I mean, I'm not sure at what point exactly we see elements of the dad just like more and more just like ready to erupt.
Just falling down.
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Like, his life has been a disappointment after disappointment.
And the one time they have something good, it literally goes to shit.
Yeah, the scene with him leaving the apartment carrying... the few little possessions he has and just scanning the apartment, like, almost with tears in his eyes. It's like, ugh.
Kevin with the rock.
Kevin and the fucking rock. But you know what? And this is something I noticed this time watching it, is how he clutches that rock.
Because it's supposed to mean prosperity.
Yeah.
But also, it's heavy.
Mm-hmm.
His heart is heavy. He didn't mm-hmm. want any of this to happen. He feels bad about that. About the housekeeper and he keeps acting like he's got to be the one to do something about it. So he clutches that thing to his chest just to denote the heaviness that he's carrying in his chest.
Yeah. So they get out. We get a brief moment.
I think
moment.
That's the one cogent note I made that that I remembered. I will get to my actual notes that are the ramblings of a lunatic.
I mean, it might feel to Kevin like karma. Like, we destroyed somebody tonight, mm-hmm. and now we are getting destroyed.
Well, maybe, but I think some of his action later, I don't know. Anyway, we'll get to that. So we get a very brief moment of the son, the young rich son, waking up and seeing the Morse code. And we don't really get much out of that. Like, besides that, he was like, oh, and he's, like, taking it down.
Well, he was very close to getting help.
Right.
Like, it was H-E-L-O, and then...
I think it was H-O-L. Like, because he's however old he is, so maybe his spelling isn't great, but it was like he was spelling hope. Like, it wasn't...
Oh, I thought it was H-E-L-O. I don't know why, but... And then there was a me after that.
Or I think there was just an M. Like, it was H-O-L-P-M, so it wasn't quite help me.
Yeah, it was...
Plus,
it,
you but, know, because it wasn't... Either mm-hmm. the translation was off on one end or the other, I mean, ever so slightly.
It is a guy bashing his head against yeah. the thing, so how I... But we got the gist of what he was trying to...
Mm-hmm.
So, that was very brief. Then we get the scene in the shelter, where it's with, like, a gym with all the people that... have been pulled out of the sewer floor.
Oh, and that's where he's Kevin's clutching that yes. thing to his chest, like
because that's the thing that he got out of the house.
Yeah, well, that but
when Dad,
I
has,
like to believe of the metaphor.
Like he's talking to Dad, and Dad's like, "Yeah, like, do you have a plan?" And he's like, "No." It's like if you make a plan, life never works out that way.
Mm-hmm. I felt like that before. I think we all have felt like
it
that.
Just
before.
So like. There's
if you never have hopes, you can't be disappointed.
Yeah, there's such a hopeless wisdom to that right. that and that's kind of emblematic of the entire movie where there's always straddling contradictory concepts or feelings or. And you have to reconcile all of it. And it's, I mean, and obviously this family has done that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been beaten down, obviously, plenty. And, you know, since they're not the greatest people, you got to think at some point they've brought this on themselves. But certainly not all of it.
Right. So then we get... the decision to have a birthday party in the backyard.
Yeah, another thing. And this is the ramen request on complete fucking
yes,
steroids.
Yes, they call in all their staff on Sunday.
And for an impromptu...
birthday party.
Which you would think is, what, five or six people or something, if you're going to do something spur of the moment
right.
like that. No. Let's get every rich fuck we can find in a 10-mile radius
right.
to come over now. Oh, no gifts.
But we're going to need you to drive.
Here like, was... Okay, so I get what you guys are saying. I totally do. But at the same time, from a you-gotta-survive perspective, I just lost everything. Obviously, I'm tired and my mental state isn't great. But I just lost everything, and my boss calls me and says, hey, can you come in, and I will pay you double? I need that money right now.
No,
speaking of the pay,
I have no fault in them taking the offer.
No.
I just mean, like, it's almost a little bit of a windfall where it's like, hey, why don't you come in and make a bunch of extra money
but
today
that's not why they're
on a day
it.
When you really need it?
That is what. Well, no, that's not
why
the
rich people are doing it.
It's not why the rich people are doing it, but it's all about perspective.
Well, but speaking of them paying you double... this is the line that pisses me off, is when they're back behind the bushes waiting,
okay,
and the dad
is very
distraught, and he's like, hey, this is your job. I'm paying you double today.
Well, forgetting even that it's okay to we'll share all we want, but the second you want to start talking about my life,
right?
Like, let's talk about you, Mr. Kim. Let's, you know, tell me whatever. That's all well. Oh wait, you're gonna tell me little you're gonna assume you know my relationship with my wife? Fuck you! I'm paying you. Like
yeah, no,
the line of what they deem to be acceptable in.
He'd asked him multiple times though. That was kind of interesting. Is you Nick brought up basement couple, capital LOVE loved each other. This family clearly has a great bond, but rich family.
Yeah, he says earlier...
not as much. He asks, he's like, okay, but... Cause
he says something like, you can call it love earlier.
Well, he mentions, like, I need a housekeeper because he's like, she can't cook, she can't clean, like, she's not a great mom. And he's like, okay, but you love her, right? And he's like...
you can call it love. Yeah.
And then I think it gets brought up again later, and he's like, but you love her, right?
But
and
yeah.
This is the second or... I think it's the third time he asks. Okay, he's like, but... he's like, oh, she really likes to go above and beyond. And he's like, yeah, she likes her parties.
Yeah.
This is a little excessive. And then he's just like, okay, but, you know, you love her. And that's when he kind of is like,
but there's also that moment
salty for some
to
reason.
To me,
yeah,
salty part
it's a total flip of the switch where it's like, where Oh no, that's the bridge too far. The Mr. thing that Kim. Came, well, shut your that, fucking mouth it came and put on this headdress.
Wasn't right. even just that. It was you're not allowed to be in a bad mood. I'm paying you to be.
No, yeah, I mean, but that's the thing. Your feelings, your thoughts are not valid because I'm your employer.
Right.
Shut up and put on this headdress.
It's not. Why are you distraught? It's I don't give a shit. Don't be distraught in front of my family.
Yeah. The party. Don't ruin this party. You obviously didn't want to have to be dragged into.
Right. And even during the party, at some point, the wife says something about, "Oh, this rain was
double. I'm a fucking driver.
The rain was so good. It was so important. Like it was a good thing in the long run."
It happens, and that part I did remember from the first time I watched it. It's when she's in the back of the car, and Dad is driving, and she's got her feet up, and she's like, "Oh, we had all that rain. You know what though? There's so much less pollution today." I think the rain was really a good thing.
Yeah.
And after she says that, she goes and rolls down the window because she's gotten the smell.
That's right. So those were the two lines to me that were like the most.
There's a bunch. It's for whatever reason, the first. Yeah, I guess the smell issue in general has sort of triggered us all in a way, just at different points.
Which to be I got fair, it at
like multiple times.
He might. Smell bad day because he, you know, was in sewer water and then had to sleep in a gym and then got donated clothes.
Yeah.
So like, who knows what any of them smell like?
They probably all smell terrible.
Yeah, if he only smelled like an old rag, then hey,
you he probably did something definitely good. Does now.
Yeah. Right. What'd you find a bathroom in a gas station or something?
So we've got this whole setup of the party, and Kevin is fucking making out with his underage girlfriend again.
Kevin's the only one not helping with this party. Right.
But then he decides to help by taking his rock down to the basement.
Well, because
he's going to save them.
Well, no, because he's going to bludgeon them.
He's going to save his family.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but that's,
again, the weight of that rock is so much.
But there is discussion. Like, they haven't forgotten about the basement people.
Right.
Dad asks Mom, hey, have you been down there yet? Have you talked to him? And she's like, I haven't gotten a chance to yet. And then she and Jessica have a conversation about it. And she's like, take this food. Bring them some food. Like, I'm sure they're hungry. We'll talk about it. Like, I don't think any of them have any idea what the result of that was. They think they've just been locked down there.
That's true.
So they're like, take them some food. Give him some water. Let's see if we can work this out. And they didn't get
to because Jessica was going to go down there and then couldn't because she got
right and outside. Yeah, rich mom is like, lady. Oh, you have it has to be you. Which, you know, so here's something fun. This is a Korean movie.
I like that every time you preface that. I don't know.
This is a Korean movie, so I understand it's a little different over there. But as a white American watching the whole we're going to do the cowboys and Indians thing.
Yes, that I'm throughout just like, the whole movie.
What the hell? Yeah, she's going to come out with the cake. She's the cake princess. And we're going to attack her and shoot arrows at her.
And he's going to be the good Indian.
He's
going
to be the good. I'm just like, oh. Wow, okay.
Yeah, I kind of forgave that because it's a Korean they're Korean. Movie.
I'm like, that's some tone deafness.
I just chalked it up to another one of their tone deaf moments.
Right? It could be either one. Like, I'm sure people in Korea don't totally understand the plight of the American Indian, because why would they?
But at the same time, it's the kid's fascination with it, and they indulge him at every...
Right, with indulgence without information.
Yeah.
We get Kevin going down with the rock, and he...
Because he's a schizophrenic.
He drops the rock down the stairs like a dumbass. And he goes down there.
Well,
and
this just mirrors how everything went downhill when he fell down the stairs the first time.
Yeah. So then
everything is these stairs.
And Kevin, not being athletic.
I thought Jessica was the one who fell down the
stairs. Kevin fell down the stairs.
Well, he fell down, but I thought she fell into him.
I think she tried to catch him. I don't know. He fell out of his little cubby hole, and he might have knocked her.
He's a klutz.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's falling down these stairs.
Yeah. Well,
he's hard. Almost everybody.
Well, it's fucking pitch black. How are you supposed to see anything?
He goes to pick up the rock, and he looks over, and he sees the housekeeper's dead body, and he's like looking at it, and dude has like a like an animal snare, and snares him around the neck, and Kevin like is like shit, tries to run up the stairs with the snare that caught on his neck, and dude hits him in the back of the head with the rock,
and then spikes it. onto his head.
I swear I thought Kevin was dead.
There was no reason to think he wasn't.
Right, the giant pool of blood, the second blow. You would think Kevin was dead. I just put, did he just kill Kevin?
No, I was like, the first time I watched it, I was like, wow. Oh, that's Kevin.
Yeah, this turned.
And then when he survives, I'm like, huh?
Well, as soon as he got bludgeoned, I'm like, okay, everyone's dying. This is happening.
Yeah.
Well, because you see Basement Dad go up the stairs, Basement and you Dad. Know he. I mean, he just lost his wife. He's done.
Yeah.
He has snapped. He is done.
Oh yeah. He was fairly gone before that.
Yeah, he was weird before that, but now he is completely snapped.
So yeah, we get.
He walks up the stairs, he grabs the knife.
And we get the cake processional.
He rips Jessica around outside and stabs her in the chest. And then...
What does she do to him?
She kebabs him.
That's right. The mom kebabs him.
That's right, mom kebabs him.
She hits him with something. I can't remember. The cake. Yeah.
It's the only thing she has, so I would assume the cake.
Yeah.
But yeah, mom gets him kebabbed. And then, like, Smelly Dad picks up the knife and kills Rich Dad.
Well,
no, you're
skipping a huge thing.
Well, it's the whole...
A lot happens in this very short...
Did anything actually happen to the son, or did he just pass out?
He just passed out.
Okay.
Yeah, he did.
He saw his ghost.
Yes, he saw the ghost.
He saw the ghost, so he passes out, and there's this whole slow motion scene of Rich Dad being like, you get the keys to the car. We don't have time to call an ambulance.
While he's trying to stop the bleeding on Jessica.
You need to leave this person on the ground bleeding to death because our son fainted. And our son is clearly more important than your son. And just that whole
daughter,
really
yeah.
driving it home of you don't matter. We matter. You don't matter. And then Rich Dad being like, fine, I'll get the car keys. And as he grabs them from Basement Husband, he smells the smell and goes, ugh, and makes that horrific. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yep.
That's why I'm convinced that there is no sink or anything down there.
That, yeah.
At the same time, that's what you're worried about in that moment.
But I think it's just, I don't know, I think it has anything to do with the sink. I think he just smells the quote-unquote poor people smell, and it's just driven home.
Well, I'm sure, that's definitely reinforced.
So, yeah, so that happens.
And that's not until Mr. Kim goes into fucking Terminator
mode. Right, so he stabs him and kills him, and that's pretty much the climax. Then we go with the jump forward after that.
Well, we see Mr. Kim walk away.
Yeah.
Go down the stairs.
Yes.
And then you don't know what happens after that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So then we get into the flash forward. Turns out a few months later, Kevin wakes from his coma. Which, fuck you.
Yeah, I'm like,
how is he alive?
They got good doctors in Korea, I guess.
They must have some miracle
Either
workers.
That or he's a real fucking hardhead.
I mean, he survives, but Kebab Dad dies.
Kebab Dad dies.
Probably got a...
Jessica dies.
Jessica probably got it pretty close to the heart.
She bled out, for sure. Kebab guy, I think, might have gotten an organ or something.
Either that or, I mean, he's also malnutrition.
Rich Dad dies.
And weak.
Just saying, out of all the people that were injured, actually injured in that, the fact that Kevin is the one that survived is pretty wild.
If no one else got injured in that, it's still amazing that he survived.
Right.
It was interesting that when they hit him with the rock and then he threw the rock at him again, it just kind of grazed the top of his head. It didn't come down and completely crush his skull.
I guess.
Which I still assumed that he wasn't going to survive.
Sorry. If you're getting bludgeoned by a piece of the aggro crag, you're probably going to die.
The aggro crag.
So, yeah, we get that flash forward. Kevin can't stop laughing at the absurdity of the fact that he's alive and everybody's dead.
Mm-hmm.
His mom's still alive.
His mom's still alive, and she's a mess.
And dad's on the loose.
On the lam. And as soon as you're like, he disappeared, I'm like, he's in the basement. That was obvious. So then we get the Kevin in the woods looking down at the house, and I'm like, this is kind of creepy. Then the flashing light and the dad and the dad's letter.
I did appreciate the scene where they were, you know, back in their house that had flooded, and just like the little montage of mom has, she's been with a toothbrush, like, and everything is like neat and tidy and clean and in its place. Like, she's taken a lot of pride in trying to make that a home again.
Yes. Well, and I'm sure bury herself in that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we get that. We get the letter from dad. We get an explanation of where the housekeeper's dead body went, because that was one of my thoughts. I'm like, is he just down there with a rotting corpse? Mm. But he buried her when he had a chance. The family moved out. The Germans moved in. We do get a shot of a flashback from the birthday party where we see one of the dogs eating the sausage on the kebab.
Yep. which is a total dog thing to do.
It was, I'll be like, that's perfect. And we get, like, Kevin, like, with his letter back, someday I'll be rich and I'll buy the house and then you'll be free. And we get a visual of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get go back to the present day of Kevin in...
to reality.
In the reality. So then it gives us that question of, is that moment of Kevin buying the house that we see, is that just his fantasy or is that the actual future? And I like that ambiguity to end the film.
Because if the history of the family or, you know, is any... indicator, you know, you make a plan and life just doesn't work that way. And I
did like the whole, like, here's our happy ending. Like, I'm going to make money. Yeah, you see the future. He's like, all you have to do is come upstairs. They hug, they're together. And then it just brings you back to, until then,
right?
I'll just have to wait. And then that's, yeah. I think that was just a fantasy.
I think so too. And I love that that they're way off in the distance in that backyard.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not privy to that moment because, well, maybe that moment doesn't exist.
It's fair.
And we see it from that black hallway.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So kind of my final thoughts being the first time I watched this, I thought it was really well done. The first half lulls you into an idea that this is a fun, weird movie about awful people. And then it turns on you and makes it a dark, disturbing tale about how all people are awful and about the haves and the have-nots. And my question of this is, like I said, I think everybody in this film is guilty in some way, besides maybe the youngest kid. But everybody else has some sort of guiltiness in what has happened in this.
Oh, everybody has a hand.
They're all culpable. Like,
yes.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, I think it's obvious who the protagonist is, but who the villain is
everyone.
Is everyone. Yes. Yeah.
Which I think is great. Favorite weirdos?
I had originally written Alley Pisser, but...
that's a good choice.
But I was like, you know, everybody's just so fucking weird in their own way. But, like, nobody's more weird than any other.
Oh, I think there's somebody more weird
than any other. Basement Dad is...
it's pretty weird.
But I don't like him. You know what I mean?
I kind of do.
Like, there's a... like, it's... If I was like, oh, biggest weirdo? Okay, him. But favorite weirdo? God, I don't know that I came up with one.
Okay. Did you come up with a favorite weirdo?
I never do.
She's like, when did this become a segment and why are we doing it?
I think we started it with Mulholland Drive.
We did.
Because we were spoiled for choice.
I forget that it's going to be a thing.
I think we're spoiled for choice in this movie too.
In a way, yes, but I don't know. The people in Mulholland Drive were so fucking weird, like, is out of reality weird.
Well, my favorite is Basement Husband Kebab.
Basement Husband Kebab.
He is insane, and he has a strange innocence to him for...
he has a patheticness to him.
Oh, yeah.
Sure, but but he doesn't feel pathetic. Like,
I know he doesn't, but he has a self-esteem.
Does he?
Yes.
I don't think he does.
Well, until his wife dies and then he snaps.
I don't think he has any self-esteem because he's like, this is my shitty life but I'm okay with it.
He is literally, literally a kept man.
He is content. As weird as that is. Okay, so scores, I'll go first since I've watched it for the first time.
Okay.
I'm giving it 9.4.
Ooh.
Because I think it was a really, really excellent movie. Totally deserved to win Best Picture. Lemonheads. Because... much like the smell of the dad, Lemonheads you think they taste good, but then there's like that weird kind of soapy finish to them.
Weird. I kind of like the soapy finish.
I'm not saying I dislike lemon heads, but there's like the weird.
You know what?
I don't really care for lemon
heads. What if there were cilantro lemon heads?
Well, cilantro I like cilantro. Heads? Are you one of those people that thinks cilantro tastes like soap?
No, but I'm wondering if that could confuse the shit out of some palates out there. But
yeah, so that's 9.4 lemon heads.
You gonna go next?
I guess. I'm gonna give it a lower score than that, not because I didn't like the movie, just because I'm harsh with my scoring.
You really are.
I am.
I mean, I'm usually fairly critical.
I did very much like the movie. I don't know. I'm gonna give it an 8, which is a high score for me. I'm gonna give it 8 out of 10 movie theater nachos.
Why nachos?
Because they're gross and they smell weird and they're plasticky. They should be better than they are, but they're not.
Some would argue
I don't know
they
if they
great.
Should be better than they are because.
Well, you got to put the pickled jalapenos on top. That's
absolutely
why.
Not.
Oh, I like those. But I'll eat those on anything.
That's true.
That I will eat those on anything.
Or me. I love them too. That's why I was.
I used to have like. I had a neighbor that made salmon salad. And I was like. And I had this massive jar of just pickled jalapeno slices. So
those
I'm like,
in a salmon salad would be
good. Yeah, that sounds good.
It worked.
There's nothing I like about movie theater nachos.
Yeah, I can see that.
Fair enough.
The chips are usually old, too.
Yeah, that's usually the worst part of the chips.
So I'm going to give you my stoned analysis from last night before I give my score.
Sure.
I love every shot of this film. Everything is shot, whether an angle, a tilt of a head or camera, the blocking or use of, by God, depth is so deliberately, carefully, and meticulously done. Perfectly toned and nuanced. Holy hell, so cleverly ridiculous, so profound in its vapidity, and comic yet tragic, and horrible yet wonderful, and timeless yet topical and whimsical by way of precariously contained chaos. A wonder of a film, and it's a wonder a film like this could even be made anymore. This film is everything. This film is all of us.
It's got Milo Ventimiglia in it? Wasn't
that Masterpiece. Spelled MASSTURPEACE.
Okay.
All in caps.
Nice.
So
you're going to give it
like
a 4?
You're thinking This Is Us, Nick, not All of Us.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm thinking more like a cult.
So you're going to give it like a 4?
Have I given a 10?
Yes.
I shouldn't have. I think
you gave Mulholland a 10.
No, I didn't. I wouldn't.
I don't think he's given a 10. He's given some high 9s.
I think if I did give a 10, it might have been to Roger Rabbit. Which in retrospect, I'd like to take back if that's the case.
It was not Roger Rabbit.
Because
I feel like you did give a 10.
I might have given this movie the same score as Roger Rabbit, but I do like it better than Roger Rabbit.
I don't think you gave Roger Rabbit an 8.
Okay.
10, Dave, you gave 7 a 10.
Oh, that's...
All
right, that's fair.
I think this is better than 7.
Well, there's a longevity factor.
Sure.
For 7. And this movie's only 5 years old.
Also, there's a lack of Brad Pitt factor.
But also a lack of Morgan Freeman factor.
That's fair.
And a lack of Arlie Ermey factor.
Anyway.
Which is usually a detriment. Unless it's Saving Silverman. I'm going to go... I did not think of a candy, but I'll do that now. I'm going to go 9.9 mochi.
Nice. That's smart.
Ah, mochi. Can you get mochi at movie theaters?
You should.
Some fancy ones.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. I think some of those dine-in ones you might
want.
Mochi is also one of those things that I feel like should be better than it is.
I actually really like it when it's good.
I've had some, like a strawberry one that was really good. I've had a green tea one that was bleh.
So the first time I had mochi was in Japantown in San Francisco.
What a tease that was.
They specialize in it.
In Japan.
Town.
I've never been to Japan.
Yeah,
so,
I know. I would love to go to Japan.
It was like, you know, like fresh and made. It was so good.
Yeah. Mochi to me is like French macarons. Like they're so pretty that. And like they look delicious. And then I'm like, eh.
I can, but there, I can see that. But there's nothing about a macaron that I find it.
It's just way too sweet.
I don't like them, but I'm not like, whoa.
I don't think the taste is all that, and I actually despise the texture of a macaron.
Well, there you go.
But I can understand the outside of a mochi being sort of unappetizing.
I mean, it's just the rice, jelly, whatever.
Yeah, but the idea that it's ice cream you chew is kind of weird.
Uh-huh, I don't like chewing my ice cream.
I understand that.
So, that's Parasite.
Yeah.
I think we all very much liked it.
And I think it's the new winner.
Amanda's eight might throw it below Up. It'll depend on the
match. I was going to say, I think Up is still our winner.
Up is the leader right now, but this is going to be close.
And this is the most recent picture we've
yes.
talked
yes.
about.
And it's a Best Picture winner, so it's...
And so rarely are those close to right.
Yeah.
And,
well...
There's no Colin Firth or Emma Thompson in this flick.
This is true.
So, well, also, it's not the early to mid-90s. So I guess that's part of it, but
this is also one of the a foreign film won and a horror film, which you're usually always overlooked in the Oscars.
Yeah.
Well, because this isn't straight up horror.
It's not your typical best
because it's
order.
In that vein of a not quite Silence of the Lambs because Silence of the Lambs is obviously humorless. And that's why
the lotion in the basket isn't a joke.
I mean, intentionally.
Okay.
I mean, there's a lot of incidentally funny when you look back, but the movie Parasite literally has everything. Maybe not big special effects. Who gives a shit? Because the cinematography, everything is just so perfect.
It's very very. Very well done.
This is obviously someone who took time setting up. Each thing down to this, I said meticulous, but shit, I mean, everything is just so.
Yeah.
It has a quality of like older pictures, like taking you back to like that old way of doing things, which is that. It's about moments. It's about all the things of storytelling that are important and doesn't fuck around with anything that doesn't serve that story. Every shot is telling you something. And I mean, we talked about the stairs and how many times like that. Whether they're going up or down,
mm-hmm.
and they start the movie going up, they end the movie coming down.
Yeah.
It just the themes, everything. It's only 5 years old, so maybe that's why I didn't quite go 10, but 9.9. I mean, it's not like my favorite movie, but it's just. So well done that I appreciate everything about it.
That's fair. I was very impressed by this movie and I really, really did enjoy it. And now we move on to the next movie. It's my choice this time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was going to say, you were looking at Amanda like, no. All right.
It's because we talked about this before you got here.
So
he's like, oh, you haven't heard my next choice. And I'm like, it's going to be Kurosawa.
No, it's not. I actually went through a lot of thought, like questioning of what I wanted to go with. Part of it was based on conversations that I've had that there are movies that it turns out someone hasn't seen that I'm like, that needs to be addressed, but I didn't go with that. I also thought about.
And stamped out.
I also thought about choosing a movie that none of us has seen.
I have thought about that,
and that
too.
Was a finalist on my choice out of my choices.
But I have one of those, actually.
Yeah, it came down to I wanted, like, gut feeling, I wanted us to visit The House of Payne. And when I say Everlast? The House of Payne, I mean Alexander Payne.
Huh?
All right.
And there were two movies that I thought about going with.
Adaptation?
Oh, gosh, I do like adaptation.
I'm just throwing.
But
that was my first guess.
There was one that Amanda has seen and you haven't, and there was one that neither of you had seen.
People versus Larry Flint.
God, no. So I almost went with Sideways.
Oh, don't do that.
But, Sideways is great.
That movie's actually, even Hector likes that movie.
Yes. But I decided that there was the one factor that made me decide not to go Sideways is because the other one has Bruce motherfucking Dern in it. We are watching Nebraska.
Oh, God.
Hell yeah.
All right.
It's not the Bruce Dern part of it. It's definitely the Will Forte part of it that makes me go,
I get that. I get that. It's great. Bruce Dern is great in it. The old lady, I can't remember her name,
was
great
in it.
Oscars
too, didn't it?
It got nominated for a bunch of them.
I think Bruce Dern for sure.
He got nominated, yes. And so did the old lady.
I'll say the lady. The old lady.
And now we've
the lead.
And now we will have had... No, we didn't have Laura Dern. I picked the one fucking David Lynch movie without Laura Dern. Or Kyle MacLachlan, for that matter.
That's weird. Next time will be Nebraska. I really like Alexander Payne. I never think about him. But anytime one of his movies comes up...
I don't even know who he is.
I know him more for writing, I think. Oh, he also did Election.
Yep, Election.
That movie was Sideways. Weird.
The new one, The Leftovers, I haven't watched yet, but that was just came out with Paul Giamatti. Got nominated for an Oscar this year. But,
Nebraska's...
The Descendants, I believe he did, too.
With Nebraska's been one kind of like Parasite for you, where I'm like, yeah, I would like to watch that some point.
He makes quirky movies about strange people.
Okay.
Yeah, quirky would be a good word.
Yeah.
He's part of that same club as like Spike Jones and a little bit.
Yeah. So it should be an interesting watch. I haven't seen it since I watched it in theaters back in the day.
Back in the day, the movie
15
might even,
years old, maybe.
Nebraska?
Yeah, it's no. Like 15
get the
years
fuck
old.
Out of here.
That
Nebraska
was like 5 years old.
I was gonna say Nebraska might it's even so, be newer
I mean,
than Parasite.
It's pre-COVID, but
I am gonna pull it up right now, and we're
and
gonna,
you're
gonna we're
be
gonna, you're gonna be
greatly.
Ashamed of yourself.
No, I am not. You are gonna. You
it
are
is
gonna
definitely
be,
not just fight. Why is this jamming up?
I don't here know.
We go. Why is it jamming you?
Jamming me. 2013. So it's 12 years old. Or 11 years old.
Okay.
Really?
Yep.
The last five... this is one of those things where like the last 5 years just is...
Bunched together.
Yeah,
yes.
I don't understand. That's why it feels like it's 5 years old.
Yeah. So yeah. And it's still another more recent film.
Bruce Dern's still alive?
Yes.
Well, he was 11 years ago.
He was also alive when they did The Hateful Eight.
Yes, I saw him in The Hateful Eight.
He was great in that. That was after Nebraska.
Yeah, you know what?
I did not love
The Hateful
Eight.
Now that you mention it, I'm like, I thought about what I saw Hateful Eight, and I'm like, oh, that was after Nebraska.
So, yeah, we're going to get some Dern on.
Is he racist in this, too?
He's something in this.
That's all I need.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's our episode on Parasite. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy the show, you can give us a rating on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. Give us a review as well. If you have suggestions or questions or comments, you can share them on our Facebook page, Films Like the First Time, or email them to us at memoriamdevelopment@gmail.com.
If you have criticism, you can feel free to direct them to the nearest brick wall.
Yes. And, but thank you so much for listening. I'm Nick.
I'm Amanda.
Dave.
I had water in my mouth.
I love it. You sign off at perfect timing. She's got mouthful of drink.
Bye.
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 Development.